back in action after the long delay, after the long hiatus, after the long middle section. Punk News is back, ready to rumble, ready to rock. This is Punk News Podcast number 231. We're back on the Punk News Podcast. This is Features Editor John Gentile, and we are back, baby. I know there was a delay. I know all month long in December, people were like, where's the Punk News Podcast, John? John, where's the Punk News Podcast? Where's the Punk News Podcast? And I was like, we got it. We just can't get it up. Well, it's up. We're back. You know it's back because you've already listened to it. We're so happy to be back. We've been recording all along. We just had a bunch sitting in the dungeon, but we are back, and I brought the A-team. I brought some heavy hitters for our first episode back after the long delay. First of all, I am here with one of our best reviewers. The guy knows the old school punk rock. He also knows the new school punk rock. He loves all the punk rock. He got me in a Sloppy Seconds, which is a great band. He's a fellow Meat Man fanatic because Meat Man rock. We are here with Tom Trauma out in Michigan. Right? Michigan, right?
That's right.
Michigan.
The Tom frozen Trauma. Tundra, man. It was like 0 degrees for a week straight. But how you doing, fellas?
Good, good. How you doing, Tom? How is the 0 degree weather treating you?
You know, it's cold, man. I'm not really enjoying it, but oh well.
Well, speaking of a guy that's cold, more specifically, he's cool. Cool as ice. It's always ice to see him. We are here with the main man, the heavy hitter, the Titan, the Goliath. We are here. The David and the Goliath merged as one. We are here with managing editor Adam White up in that northern tundra, that northern taiga, that northern Arctic Circle. We are here with Adam White.
Hi. So I don't know too much about geography or the earth or anything like that, but, Tom, where in Michigan are you?
I'm on the west side. I'm almost on Lake Michigan.
West side!
Almost on the, so give me a city here or a city
Grand Rapids.
Is that not the beer capital of the United States?
Yeah, like craft beer.
I heard somewhere that it was. Okay.
Good stuff, man.
All right. Anyway, so yeah, we were talking about going there for beer. Okay. Now, anyways, I'm drawing a line. Let me know. I'm drawing a line here through Michigan.
If you go out through Detroit and
through Ontario and through from Windsor. Grand Rapids, I'm not a geographer. There might be some distortions. I don't know which style of map I'm looking at, but you are probably further north than I am.
It could be. I could get to Canada in 3 hours, and I could be to Windsor in 3 hours.
Yeah, like I'm looking, like Niagara Falls, it's sort of around the Grand Rapids level, but I think you might be a little bit up there. You know, there's actually a place in Sarnia where I don't know why you'd want to be in Sarnia, Ontario, but sometimes you have to be in Sarnia, Ontario.
You have to drive through it.
Narnia is not real, Adam.
Sarnia. There's a place in Sarnia where if you're standing at a certain spot, the United States is to the north. My wife is yelling from the other room that this is Windsor, where this happens. Anyways, there's all these kind of like weird places.
Right across
like,
the river from Detroit.
We're like Ontario kind of like reaches down.
I think if you stand in Oregon and California and look north, well, I was going to say there's that Alaska thing that kind of throws everything off.
That's just Russia though. Let's be true.
I'll never forget. I was in Sarnia and I was with my brother and my two sisters.
Why were you in Sarnia?
Well, because this evil witch was trying to find us. But my two sisters and I were hiding, running a chemical plant. My jackass brother sold us out for friggin' jelly beans. Like, this witch comes up and she's like, where's your brother and sisters? And he's like, can I have some Turkish Delight? She's like, you're going to sell out your family for jelly beans? He's like, I really like Turkish Delight. And that damn witch found us, man.
Yeah, and then you went back through the closet and you're all good.
This is so much, so tragically more whimsical than Sarnia, Ontario, that you have no idea.
Yeah, London, Ontario is not as impressive as London, England, I can't imagine either, but, you know, what are you going to do, huh?
It's not, but at least it's kind of like, it's a nice place. I mean, I don't want to rag too much on Sarnia here, but Sarnia sucks.
Well, speaking of things that are known for sucking, check this out, fellas. Check this out. I gotta stick up for legends. Adam and Tom Trauma. When people think of HR of the Bad Brain these days, what do they think? Do they think that's a rocking show, or do they think, oh, do not go see HR of the Bad Brains? What do people think?
I am at first surprised that he's alive.
Me and too.
Second, sort of surprised that he's still interacting with society.
Me too.
I would think hit or miss at best.
So, you know, I mean, HR has got a terrible reputation for live shows these days. And honestly, it's not without reason. I mean, he's played with the Bad Brains a couple of times. Well, not a couple. A fair amount in the past 5 or 6 years. And for a lot of the shows, he just goes up there and doesn't even do anything. Or he literally just mumbles and doesn't do anything. Or he doesn't even sing. Or he sings, like, different songs. Like, the band is ripping, but HR just does not care at Bad Brains live shows. So, a couple weeks ago, in my hometown of Philadelphia, this was not advertised. I just saw this on the website for a venue called Kung Fu Necktie. Very small venue, probably about, 75 to 80 people capacity. It's an HR and what was the name of the band? It's the Scotch Bonnets. HR and the Scotch Bonnets, $6. As you may remember, HR recently released an EP with the Scotch Bonnets. And I was like, how can they be charging $6 for HR? Like, a shitty house show can be $7 or $8 with bands you've never even heard of. How are they getting $6 for HR, right? So I had to go because, I mean, was it going to be bad? Probably. But I had to know if HR with the Scotch Bonnets would be good for $6. So I go. Pace is hardly full at all because they didn't promote it. They didn't advertise it at all. Scotch Bonnets open. Well, actually, there's a couple other opening. And Scotch Bonnets comes out. They're from D.C., and they're kind of like a modern ska act, but not third wave ska, kind of like an American version of Jamaican ska with a little bit of jazz and funk mixed in. They were actually pretty cool, man. They had some hard driving numbers, some funky tunes. And they also had this song, Adam and Tom Trauma. Tell me, I was listening to this song. I'm like, this song is really, really good. Where have I heard this song before? It was a super cool version. Here's the refrain, and it took me a while to get, but I eventually got it. Why would they vote in favor of their own defeat, cut from the cloth? Do you know that song?
Hmm.
Now, this is a reggae version.
It does not ring a bell.
Adam White?
Yeah. Your angelic voice. I was more lost in that than
cut from the cloth.
Than the
Why
lyrics.
Would they vote in favor of their own defeat, cut from the cloth?
Cut from the cloth.
It's the Evens. It was a reggae version of an Evens song. The Evens, Ian McKay and Amy Farina. And it was awesome. It was one of the coolest covers I ever heard. I'm like, this band is cool. So anyway, then HR comes out. And of course, you know, he's wearing tons and tons of, like, woolies. And, like, he's got, like, 4 layers of pants on. He's got, like, 7 sweatshirts, like, 3 hats. I'm not even kidding, you know. He gets up there, and he just stands there, right?
How big of a band are we talking about?
Very big. 7 or 8 people.
Wow.
So HR gets up there, and then Scotch Bonnets breaks into a reggae number, and I'm expecting this to be bad. You know what? It was actually, like, very good. Like, they did only about 7 or 8 songs, all reggae. The Bad Brain song they did was Leaving Babylon, and it was, I mean, it wasn't, I was expecting it to be terrible, but it was pretty good. So because I was expecting it to be terrible, it was great. And I got to say, man, HR delivered. I mean, it wasn't like a mind-blowing performance, but it was a very, very good HR reggae show. So I got to give HR credit for that. It was cool, man.
Just think about the economics of this. You're saying the place only holds 75 or 80 people at $6 a piece, and it was half full.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like who put this together? Like
every guy in the band had a larger tab than they took home at the end of the night.
That's what I'm saying. Like eight, you definitely can charge at least like $12 for HR, right?
Especially if he's playing with a ska band, which is, like, I assume more than 3 people.
Yeah, like $6. Who's doing this? Like, who's putting this together? You know, but, I mean, it was cool, man. So I got to say, if you get the chance to see HR doing reggae and you like reggae, it's worthwhile. It's pretty cool.
His solo stuff, he doesn't ever do hardcore stuff solo, I don't believe, does he?
He's got a couple hardcore songs on his early SST records. There's, like, okay. 3 or 4 of them, but it's mostly reggae. And honestly, they're pretty – I mean, it's not great reggae, but it's pretty good, and it's cool to see live. And it is really cool to hear him doing Leaving Babylon live, which is a cool track.
So would you recommend that someone, whenever they can see HR, goes to see HR? Because it's guaranteed to be a good show.
Yes. No, no matter what, no matter if it's Bad Brains, no matter if you're flying cross country to see him at a festival doing Bad Brains, if you got to fly to Sweden, you should go. I guarantee you it would be a great show. Speaking of bands that put out great shows, Sleater-Kinney, they're back together. Not only are they back together, they're streaming the new album. The new album is called No Cities to Love, and it's going to be out January 20th, 2015. It's streaming right now on NPR, but by the time you hear this, it'll probably be out. It's out on Sub Pop. Adam White, I know you're a fan of this band. Did this album live up to the reunion potential?
Oh, I really like this. I really do, John. I was a huge fan of The Woods, which was the last record that they had come out before they split. I understand why some people didn't like The Woods. I mean, it was sort of like a weirdly loud kind of like, oppressively mixed for how loud kind of they were playing record at times. But I really liked hearing the band just kind of like go all out on this hard rock thing that they were doing. It didn't have necessarily some of the quirkiness is a word that's too...
It sounds too
precious for what they do, but it wasn't as weird, say, as One Beat or anything like that. But I really liked it. But I was a little bit worried that they were going to retreat and maybe back away from what The Woods was doing or the direction they were going there and kind of step back to what people more traditionally know them as. And I mean, like, you know, if I close one eye and tilt my head to the side, like I can kind of see that with the types of songs they wrote for this record, but this sounds so good. They're playing so well. I really like this. Every time I've gone back and re-listened to this stream, I am just more happy with it. So I'm cool. This is a really high bar for me for 2015 to be set right away. So that's cool. That's great. I think everyone should go out and listen to this, especially if you've never heard Sleater-Kinney before for some reason. And I could understand why if you are a, I don't know, who can I make mad at me? You know, if you mostly like listen to Lagwagon, and that's your thing, and you've never gone to listen to them before because you assume it's like a Pitchfork band or something like that, go listen to this. It's really good. So, yes, that's where I'm going to leave you with. I am, though, going to just make a note here that I've never seen the comments on an NPR.org article before.
Oh, neither have I.
I'd never gone and read them. I assume that, you know, taking the NPR stereotype into account, they'd be, you know, really, really highbrow and intellectual and, you know, politically correct and all that. But there's a just as many dummies there as the rest of the internet. And in a way, that makes me feel good.
The first comment is somebody calling somebody a Goomba.
Yeah. It's like I went and I read it and I said, oh, humanity. God bless you. You're the same everywhere, whether you're on NPR or YouTube. So anyways, yeah, go listen to Sleater-Kinney. It's a good record.
Tom, where do you stand?
I got to say, these gals, were barely on my radar. So I checked it out. I didn't hate it, but it's not up my alley. I'm not necessarily a Lagwagon fan, Adam, but it's just not up, not really up my alley.
Well, there you have it.
I was one of the people you should have gone out of your way to insult. And
you're that Goomba who was
exactly. I'm too thick-headed to get the subtle nuances of their music. It just doesn't do it for me. Garagey. I mean, the one I listened to it seemed kind of garagey, and it wasn't bad. It just wasn't not for me.
Well, speaking of a thing that's not for some people, recently an online seller who I don't think is actually affiliated with Nirvana put up a T-shirt to sell on Etsy, which is like it's a craft website, but people put up like T-shirts and stuff on Etsy and like necklaces and that kind of thing.
It's a craft marketplace. Like if you make things out of beads, that's where you can go sell them.
So somebody put up a T-shirt of basically
it's pretentious eBay.
Pretentious eBay. It's a T-shirt with the Kurt Cobain suicide note basically on the front of the T-shirt, the entire suicide note. It was up there, and it upset a lot of people because Kurt Cobain committed suicide when he was 25, 27, and this suicide note was published right after his death. Etsy responded pretty quickly, and they took it down. And so basically, I guess the question here is this in poor taste? Is it art? Or is it just a further exemplification of the original publication of Kurt Cobain's Suicide Note, which I think Courtney Love published. Wasn't that who published Kurt Cobain's Suicide Note?
Speaking of crass, huh? Hmm.
So, I mean, you know, you could say this is art, or you could say this is crass commercialism.
No, this isn't art. All right, that's where I'm going to... All right. I think that wearing this is kind of fucked up, and if you wear this, you're probably a bad person. But, I mean, outside of that, I'm okay with art being controversial. You know, heck, I'm okay with art being controversial for the sake of it being controversial. I mean, heck, I said heck twice. That's weird. You know, we've seen that.
You just used the F word, but now you got to cut heck because you don't want hell to slip through.
I mean, you know, given what happened in France recently, I understand, you know, art that's being controversial for the sake of controversial. I'm cool with that. This isn't art. I'm not seeing this being doctored in some arty way. It is a T-shirt onto which someone has printed a photograph. Like, I don't quite get the art in this. It seems kind of lazy. Like,
how is this different than Andy Warhol putting a tomato soup can on a canvas?
I don't know. Andy Warhol's, you know, he had a little bit more. Let's say a little bit more of a lead up to him doing that, so that could be seen within the realm of the rest of his work. This is someone that is on a, you know, a crafting website where people sell, you know, things made with twine and beads and sparkles, and they've gone, hey, I got some T-shirts that I printed this thing that you could have got on the internet on. Buy one. That's not, I don't know. We don't know the motive, though.
We don't know the motive, Adam. Maybe it was a loving tribute or some sort of a powerful statement about suicide. You know, maybe it's just to make a buck, but, you know,
it could be an attack on Kurt Cobain, too. You know, the Melvins have taken this position in that Kurt Cobain is very much deified in the realm of rock and roll, but the Suicide Note paints him not as this glamorous, tragic figure, but as this junkie with a lot of problems, you know?
And he was both.
Well, I disagree. I think he's a good artist. I don't think he's a great artist.
Maybe I don't quite get Etsy, because I'm here looking this up, and if you go onto Etsy and you look up, like, Kurt Cobain shirt, there's a bunch of people selling T-shirts with, you know, photographs of Kurt Cobain on them. So none of this strikes me as art or necessarily as a licensed product that anyone's actually making money.
In 1991, when Nirvana first got started playing on the radio, it was pretty stark, John. If you were pretty young, but if you remember the awful condition of rock and roll radio in 1991, to hear a song like Smells Like Teen Spirit was really jolting. And while I certainly wouldn't call it punk rock, it was a gateway band for a lot of people. So I hold them in fairly high esteem.
Well, see, I have to be anti-Nirvana because I'm pro-Melvins. So you can't be both.
Is that right?
That's right.
Well, in 1994, the winter of 1994, my sister was going to see Nirvana play down in Kalamazoo, about an hour away. We used to go see all kinds of shows there. I saw everything from Judas Priest to Metallica and Smashing Pumpkins. You know, and I saw all the other bands from that era twice. Smashing Pumpkins, Alice in Chains, Pearl Jam. Saw them all. But it was winter, and I don't know if I had to work or what. My sister's like, come on, let's go see Nirvana. And I'm like, I'll catch them next tour. You know, they only got two albums out there just getting started. And little did I know that the guy would be dead a couple months later, and I missed my window of opportunity. So shame on me, I guess.
So you never got to see Nirvana?
I never got to see them, but they played for a half empty hockey rink. I know their star had already kind of fallen to a certain extent, but I would have liked to see them now, obviously, but you know.
You guys, look at the link I just sent you in the Skype chat thingy here.
I saw it.
Look at these quality Nirvana products you can get on Etsy. So here is a T-shirt onto which someone will, heat transfer a copy of a Rolling Stone cover that they don't have the rights to reproduce onto. But look at how real this is. So notice how the shirt has, you know, wrinkles by being fabric. But the thing that they're going to, that's on the shirt that you buy is not wrinkled.
And how much? And look how much they're charging for this wonderful piece of craftsmanship. Yeah.
For $42, someone will go to, you know, wow, to Target and buy a gray sweatshirt and print whatever copyrighted shit they have on it for you, and then sell it to you for $42.
I mean, do you think they sold a single one of these?
I don't. Well, hey.
Probably.
I mean, look at the name of this product. Kurt Cobain shirt, sweatshirt, Nirvana, Foo Fighters, pop, punk, rock, hippie, grunge, hip-hop, rap, emo, legend, rock and roll, hard rock, R&B.
Wow.
That is a product name for the ages. This is all garbage. I'm pretty sure that this Suicide Note t-shirt was probably one of these, you know, one of these people trying to peddle as much garbage as they can on Etsy, and it was just one of like the, what, it was one of like the 45 things that they Google image searched Nirvana for, and then, you know, quickly dumped onto their stock gray t-shirt image, and then plopped it on the Etsy for some sucker to buy, and then it became news. That's where I'm going with.
Mm. Can I get one more aside, if you don't mind, real quick? John and I are both big fan of the Meat Men, and this is a band, you know, Tesco V. This is a guy who really does hold nothing sacred. And I remember going to see him in the mid '90s. They were actually opening for Guar.
Nice.
It was nice. also in Kalamazoo. It was one of the most violent shows I've ever seen, but. The Meat Men are always their merchandise machines. They had racks and racks of t-shirts, all different stuff. And this was my 1990, it was either late 94 or 95. And they had a t-shirt that said something like, "Smells like Cobain." And the picture on the front was a variation of the baby in the pool, except it was Kurt Cobain minus his head holding a shotgun in the pool.
Damn. So,
exactly. So, yeah, it makes the Suicide Note look a little.
Damn.
A little more tasteful. I don't know. Something about Uncle Tesco. He just can't offend me. You know, he's too good. He's too good of a spirit.
You know what? Well, yeah. I mean, Tesco, like, you can't get mad at Tesco because he's not serious. It's like, no. He's not like, "I'm glad Kurt Cobain is dead." He's saying, "Look what a rapscallion I am. I'm just doing this just to be a rapscallion," you know? Yeah. So I love Tesco. Tesco's great.
You know, I've had the privilege to meet him a number of times because he's kind of local here to us. And there's two things that you'll be amazed by. A, he's very quiet and reserved in person, and he's tall, very, very tall.
Yeah, he's really tall, yeah.
But anyway, sorry. My last aside on the Nirvana thing. Go ahead, John.
I think that about wraps up that. I mean, I don't know. I agree this is just somebody trying to make a buck, although I do foresee the possibility that it is an artistic statement. So, but I think it's just somebody trying to make a buck. What are you going to do?
Don't buy it, and it goes away.
Speaking of somebody just trying to make a buck, Jeff Rosenstock is putting out a new album on Side One Dummy. Flawless. He's selling this album instead of giving it away for free online, but actually he will be giving it away online for free, too. The album is called We Cool. It's out March 3, and on the album he's got Mike Huguenot, Kevin Higuchi, and I'm trying to remember who the third guy – oh, this is so bad for me not to remember who the third guy is. It's Kevin Higuchi, Jeff Rosenstock, and I'll look up the last guy.
We'll call the last guy Snake.
This is Jeff Rosenstock has released a couple of projects. Yeah, Snake. Jeff Rosenstock has released a couple of projects since the end of Bomb Music Industry. He's put out a couple of Antarctica Vespucci projects. He's put out a couple of home recorded albums. He put out his one called I Look Like Shit. He put out an EP that you could download, and he actually put out a CDR, which I got, which is super rare and exclusive. But this is his first real statement, and it feels like he's going on tour with Andrew Jackson Jihad. He's going on tour with Smith Street Band all at once, and I think it's chumped, and I'm probably going to go to that tour. But it seems to me, you know, Jeff Rosenstock has basically mused the idea that he can't quite make it in the music industry, that he's always broke even though he's writing music. So it seems like this is really his big push to really break through into becoming a professional musician. Do you guys think he'll make it? Will this be some grand artistic statement? Will it be a radical change? Or will it just be Jeff Rosenstock making Jeff Rosenstock tunes?
You know, of all the acts that are really huge on the org that I don't pay attention to / care about, he seems like one of the coolest guys, and he's always working very hard. So I certainly wish him luck. I don't know if he'll be able to make it or not, but he's always seems like he's always producing something or playing in a band or doing five different things. So I'm going to make it my resolution for 2015 to try to pay attention to some of his stuff.
I'm sure this is going to sound like Jeff Rosenstock making Jeff Rosenstock music, but That's okay, because that's generally a delightful thing. That's what all of us that are fans of Jeff Rosenstock kind of want Jeff Rosenstock to do. So I don't quite buy the the Jeff can't make it in the music industry, Jeff's going to quit and go get a job working at a grocery store
stuff. You don't disagree that that's the narrative, though. I mean, you agree that that's the narrative so far, correct?
Yeah, to some degree, it's sort of his shtick.
Yeah.
His whole body of work has this sort of, you know, this vibe to it where, like, you know, I'm getting older and I'm still kind of poor and fucked up and not very successful, but aren't I insecure and weird about things, right? And he expresses that sort of thing in so much music. And back, you know, a lot of the bomb music industry stuff was about that kind of set of feelings, I guess, right? And him expressing that, like, oh, I might quit, oh, I don't know if I'm gonna quit, oh, you know, I'm gonna try to be successful now, I don't buy it from a, you know, from a perspective, oh, Jeff's gonna buckle down and start writing commercial music because he needs to make money. Like, I don't know, I don't think that's true. I just think that's just, you know, that's Jeff being Jeff, and what he's gonna do is he's gonna turn around a bunch of music that's gonna be, like, probably totally great, but it's gonna be kind of, you know, Jeff music, as we hope that Jeff would write for us. It's not going to be some dramatic left turn for the sake of, you know, he's got a mortgage to pay now.
The other guy on the record is John Day Domenici of Bomb Music Industry, who I really should have mentioned. I'm excited for this, but A, will this be a breakthrough album for Rosenstock's got a fan base, but it seems to me that the Bomb fan base is about as big as it's going to get. Will this expose Jeff Rosenstock to a much larger audience?
That I don't know. And that's actually the one thing that when you asked that earlier, I was... I'm not quite sure, putting, like, my marketing hat on, how that works, because I've got to imagine that Bomb the Music Industry, if given the push of, say, Side One Dummy, would have a better chance at clicking with a bunch of new people than an act called Jeff Rosenstock, just going on strictly on optics, I guess.
I disagree.
Let's say you don't know Jeff Rosenstock. Let's say you're this mythical 16-year-old kid, okay? Who we like to imagine that gives a crap about buying music, right?
Can my name be Tommy Microchip?
Yeah, you're Tommy Microchip. All you do is listen to Dead Mouse or whatever you call that thing, right?
Yeah.
Right? That's all you listen to. But you know what? For whatever reason, you've got stuck on a bus next to some guy that's handing out Side One Dummy samplers.
And a guy's handing out samplers?
Yeah, it's great, right?
Dude, Tommy Microchip gets into some funky adventures.
I know. So this guy from Side One gives you a sampler, and you take one just to be ironic because you're an asshole, right? So you take this thing. And
you're playing Candy Crush at the same time.
Yeah, you're playing Candy Crush, right? You got one of those, like, gigantic white hoodies that everyone wears for some reason, right? So you're basically a garbage person. But anyways, so you take this sampler and you bring it home and you look at it and you go, oh, which of these songs am I going to listen to?
Well, first thing I say,
you don't even have a CD player.
Yeah, I'm like, what is this thing?
Okay, so this Side One Dummy rep is given out.
Download cards.
They got a big batch of surplus Zunes from Microsoft, and they loaded them up with all their stuff and was giving them to kids. And they said, "Look, you asshole kid, Tommy Microchip, whatever your name is, you got some headphones. It'll fit in this Zune. Just plug it in and listen to this shit." So you got to pick from, like, one of these handful of bands on there. And remember, so you're into EDM and all these, like, things with weird names and all that, and you see. You see one that's by Jeff Rosenstock, and then you see another one that's by, let's say, Bomb the Music Industry. Bomb the Music Industry sounds much more interesting and dangerous. Jeff Rosenstock sounds like your accountant.
Ah, but may I counter?
this got really complicated as a scenario.
Tommy Microchip is totally going to listen to Bomb the Music Industry, but actually he won't even, because he'll be like, what is this, man? None of my friends listen to this. Tommy Microchip sucks. But may I counter? I'm a guy that's riding my bicycle on the way to the organic coffee cafe, and I've got a beard, and I've got a peacoat on and a scarf, even though it's 83 degrees, and it's March. And I pull up to the cafe, and there's a guy outside handing out records, right? And he says, I will give you two records, Jimmy Leatherbag. So me being Jimmy Leatherbag, I'm 28, and I've got tattoos on my neck and my arm, and they're like anchors and that kind of stuff, you know what I mean? And I've got a mustache, too. And so they're like, all right, Tommy Leatherbag. Oh, and I've got one of those gigantic man purses, too, that are cool now. But because I'm a man and I haven't had one, I hit people all the time with it but don't realize it because I haven't grown up with a purse like women tend to do, so they know how to manage their purse. Men with purses these days do not know how to manage their purse. And so, first of all, like, would you like this Steely Dan record? And I'm like, yeah, I love Steely Dan because that's the kind of guy Tommy Leatherbag is. But then he's like, would you like a Bomb the Music Industry record or a Jeff Rosenstock record? I'll be like, Bomb the Music Industry. What is that, like you exploit it? I'll take Jeff Rosenstock. Maybe it's soulful and acoustic. And so I take that home and I spin that. I'd argue that Jimmy Leatherbag would be more than Jeff Rosenstock. But the question is, would Jimmy Leatherbag dig Jeff Rosenstock? That's the question. Yeah, that's the question is, would Tommy Microchip dig Jeff Rosenstock? And would Jimmy Leatherbag dig Jeff Rosenstock?
I'm going to contend that Jeff Rosenstock and Bomb the Music Industry sound exactly the same for this argument.
No, I agree, but I'm saying, do either of these fellows enjoy that kind of music? Do they have the capacity to enjoy this kind of music? Because it seems like, you know, Side One Dummy is trying to branch out of the punk rock, not branch out, but expand from the punk rock base, because they need money, and I don't blame them. You know, Smith Street Band is not strictly punk rock. Andrew Jackson Jihad is cool, but they're not strictly punk rock. You know what I mean?
Well, all right, so in the case of Tommy Microchip, or is it Johnny Microchip? Yeah. My God,
I think it's Tommy Microchip and Jimmy Leatherbag.
All right. So for Tommy Microchip, the EDM kid, he's one of these millennials that has no attention span. So by the time he's gotten off the bus, he's thrown the Zune away or you know, stuck it between a pair of like the seats on the bus and has left it there or something. He has no drive in life. So he's, you know, whatever. Even if he liked it, he wouldn't actually go do anything about it. So he's a lost cause. He's not a demographic that the marketers of the world want, because he has no money, because he's unemployed, because society has left him behind. And, you know, he has no drive to actually make anything of himself. So fuck that guy and his whole generation. The other guy, the beard mustache guy, I think that when no one is looking at him and he's not around anyone and he doesn't need to look cool or he doesn't need anyone to, you know, to acknowledge or validate him, he'll listen to it and maybe he's into it. And he's got some money. So if I was trying to choose which of those people I was trying to market to, I guess I would go for Jimmy Leatherbag. But I have no idea what we're talking about.
Last question. Will
they need to sell them at Whole Foods Market is what you're saying. They need to sell 180-gram vinyl records at Whole Foods Market.
Last question. Will Pitchfork review this? If they do, what score will they give it? Because you can almost always guess Pitchfork reviews before they even read the review.
I would imagine Pitchfork will be harsh.
I think Pitchfork will review this and give it a 7.7.
I don't know.
7.3. Mark my words, Pitchfork 7.3.
No, I could see like a 4.7.
But then
the whole thrust of the review has really nothing to do with the content of the record, but it's mostly a refutation of the fact that because the punk rock community online has lionized this guy so much, we're all a bunch of dummies. And that's really what the review would be of. The review would be less of the record and more like of the fan base.
Mm. Tom?
That's a good point, Adam. I'm not sure about that. I think he could go either way. I think he's quirky enough that I think there's enough overlap that it could be a hit with that crowd. But
is he cool enough?
I don't know. Are any of us cool enough, John?
I'm cool enough.
I don't know.
I'm so cool, I'm going to talk about the next article. Gallows. They've released a new single. Not only have they released a new single, they're going to release a new album very soon on April 14th. The new album is called Desolation Sounds. And not only that, they're going to release a 7-inch single, or actually a 7-inch EP with 4 tracks. The debut single is called Bonfire Season. And here's what guitarist Laurent Legs Barnard had to say. He said, "Bonfire Season began as an ode to the amazing Susie and the Banshees. I've always been a fan of that slightly gothic, dark style of punk, and felt it was time for Gallows to explore that style of music. The verses still have that old school boot stomp feel, but combined with atmospheric noises providing menacing undertones." Do you guys dig this track?
No. It sounded like a song that would have been, like, the Deftones would have said, that's not good enough to make it on whatever album in 1999. That's what I thought of it.
That's what I thought. They're like, we're taking hardcore in a gothic direction, but it just sounded like new metal to me.
I sort of want to go back and listen to it because I read the Susie and the Banshees thing, and that almost makes me want to listen to it with that kind of subtext, but I just thought it sucked, and I'm a pretty big fan of the band, honestly.
I was on that wavelength where I read the Susie and the Banshees thing, and I thought, hey, cool, that's I could dig that. That's you know, I'll be on board. But this, the biggest crime of it, I guess, the biggest crime of it is that I guess it was kind of forgettable. I listened to it, I don't know, an hour ago, and the only thing I remember about it was that the video for it makes like twinkly noises for like a minute and 30 seconds or something before it actually gets into the song. And that's all that clicked for me, except that while listening to the song, which, yeah, was kind of mid-tempo in a bad way and not very engaging, I realized that, like, I really like Wade McNeil's voice. It's got that kind of like smoky, gravelly thing, but
Are you familiar with their earlier stuff?
I'm not familiar with Gallows prior to Wade joining, and that's me being super Ontario
but the original singer is Frank something. I can't remember his last name, but this guy, you want to talk about this guy's voice would shred the paint off the wall. And Wade does a good job, and I thought the record they did with him was good, but that original singer, he was something else, man.
Yeah, and I always got that impression from the Punk News audience when they switched, and there was a part of me that almost wished that, like, I like Wade, but I didn't, you know, I thought it kind of sucked that, like, you know, you have this guy that everyone thinks is just like an otherworldly vocalist, and then you got to be the guy to follow him up. It doesn't really matter how good you are, you're not that guy.
Well, and that's why I was pleasantly surprised at the last record. And, you know, these preview tracks are such a double-edged sword because, oh, of course you want to hear the new song, but I got to say, this Gallows record for me is one of my more anticipated albums of 2015, and now I'm going, ugh, how many good songs do they have to wrap around that turd to make it acceptable even within the context of a long player, you know? So the preview tracks sometimes can kind of piss in your Wheaties, and that seems to be the case with this one with me.
Piss in your Wheaties. I dig that. Piss in your Wheaties. Well, speaking of something that's not piss in your Wheaties, I got a song here. This is a band by a band. This is a song by a band called Hivehead. We actually played them in their previous incarnation, Death Leads a Dog, and I feel a little bad about this because I said when we played the Death Leads a Dog track, I'm like, I dig the song, but maybe they could change their name. So they did change their name. I hope it wasn't because of the new name is cooler, honestly. So this band is called Hivehead. They've got a new EP out. Most of it's free online, I think. It is kind of Susie Sue, and it is kind of goth merged with hardcore. I dug this track. This is Hivehead doing their single King Garbage, and you can find them online at hivehead.bandcamp.com. So once again, this is King Garbage by Hivehead. We'll be right back.
sitting on his own.
Punk News Podcast. That was a little bit of goth, a little bit of hardcore. You know how we roll on the Punk News Podcast, but let's change it up. Let's talk about Joel Tanenbaum, longtime Punk News friend. He's been on the Punk News Podcast a bunch of times. He was on the Christmas episode. I think he was on episode 200. He comes on, he plays tunes. He gets angry when I ask him to read from a script. Joel's a good guy. He's in Plaid United. Some of you guys might know Plaid United. He's an ex-friend who just broke up. Well, he's got a new band. The new band is called The Rentiers, and it's going to have a 4-track EP come out sometime soon, or probably in the fall, on Square of Opposition Records. They released a single, and it is called Stories of Adam. Did you guys dig this track, Stories of Adam, by Joel Tanenbaum?
I appreciate this being named after me. I like this. I mean, I like Joel. Joel's a friend. We were just talking about how I like Wade McNeil's voice. I like Joel's voice. It's, you know, it pleases me in kind of a gravelly replacements-y kind of way. I don't quite have, like, a feel from this one song about what this band sounds like. Is it all kind of stuff of this tempo? Do they change it up? I don't know. But I like this.
I did not listen to it, I must confess. Dig Plow United, did not check out that song.
Oh, you just fulfilled the stereotype of this podcast.
You know, last time I was prepared and I was mocked, so now I'm trying to fit in with you guys.
Well, people get mocked no matter what they go on this podcast. But it seems that lately Joel is going sort of in a Bob Dylan kind of direction or a Velvet Underground acoustic direction. I dug it. I'm excited. I will definitely check this out. Joel, actually, I was talking to Mikey Erg on New Year's Eve. Dropping names. I was talking to Mikey Erg on New Year's Eve, and Mikey Erg said to me that he thinks Joel Tanenbaum is one of the greatest songwriters he knows. Which is high praise coming from Mikey Yerga. And really, Joel really is a really great songwriter. I like his jacked up punk rock stuff. And he's actually maybe able to appreciate some of the more acoustic Bob Dylan kind of stuff. So I think this is going off in a real interesting direction. And I'm excited to hear the 4-track EP that's coming out. Speaking of old dudes, Captain Sensible. He's back in the news. Captain Sensible of the Damned. Being in classic Captain Sensible, what happens is way out over in Brighton in England, a development company was trying to tear down the Brighton Hippodrome. The Brighton Hippodrome is a famous venue. It was built in 1897. It's been all manner of things, from orchestra to bands to like ballet, all manner of things in its 100-plus years of existence. Well, this development company called the Alaska Group, in conjunction with a movie theater group called View over in England, were trying to tear down the historic Hippodrome to build a movie theater. And actually, the Beatles and the Rolling Stones played some of their earliest concerts there, too. Well, a protest group headed by a guy called Paul Zenon, they did a petition and they physically protested. And believe it or not, as of right now, the development and destruction, well, rather, the destruction of the Hippodrome has been halted. Interestingly enough, Captain Sensible was on the front lines of the protest, walking the walk, putting his mouth where his words are. What's that phrase? Put his money where his mouth is? Is that the phrase?
That's it.
Whatever you want it to be. Yeah,
doing the punk rock thing. He was there. Like, he was actually on the protest. He's a member of the protest group. And he said, Sensible's on his soapbox again, this time as part of the Save the Brighton Hippodrome campaign. Now, new owners plan to knock down the lovely old place and have it replaced by a multiple cinema when Brighton is full of the blooming things already. So I just thought this was cool. Like, Captain Sensible, A, I found this interesting for two reasons. A, Captain Sensible is literally a first-wave punk rocker. You could not find a longer-running punk rocker in England than Captain Sensible. So, I mean, he's doing direct action, but he's doing action to, you know, protest what he thinks is the wrong thing, and he stopped it. But also I find it interesting is, you know, one of the concepts of punk rock is that, like, we don't care about the history. We don't care about what came before us. We want the new stuff. We want to destroy what came before us. But this is Captain Sensible saying, let's appreciate history and protect it. Maybe because by this point he is history. I didn't mean like that. I mean, I'm a huge Captain Sensible fan.
That was really complimentary. And then like, but he's old.
No, I didn't mean like that. I'm saying Captain Sensible, he's an iconic. I should have said maybe because he's iconic and he's been around a long time. So, I mean, you can't deny that he's been around for over 40 years now. So, I mean, he understands 40 years. Let's see, 87, 97, 2000, almost 40 years, about 34, 35 years. He, I mean, he's been through it all. He's seen it all. So maybe as you get older, you appreciate time frame and what came before you.
So Captain Sensible is sitting there with like a little bit of damned makeup on, you know, just hanging out, thinking about life and death and aging. And he's like, wow, he's like, you know, I'm old. I'm getting older. I can feel mortality creeping up on me. Like, I can feel the cold hand of death on my shoulder. And he looks up and he goes, just like that building. Look at that. Look at that 100-year-old building. That building is like me, man. I'm just like that building. No one gives a shit. No one gives a shit about old Captain Sensible anymore. No one gives a shit about the Hippodrome. That building is me. And then he gets on this campaign.
So he thinks if he can save the Hippodrome, he can save himself.
It's symbolic.
At least.
It's symbolic. You know what's interesting? It didn't mention anywhere that they had ever played there. Did it sound like he had a personal connection to the place? I mean, did he see the Beatles there or something?
I bet you. I mean, Captain Sensible is a huge fan of like early rock. I know he's a gigantic T-Rex fan, so he probably saw T-Rex there. The only reason we mentioned Rolling Stone and the Beatles is because that's the only thing the English papers mentioned. But I know hundreds or thousands of groups played there. So who knows? I mean, Captain Sensible is a huge music fan, so he probably saw somebody there. Maybe he saw the Beatles and the Stones there.
And if they tear it down, like, where would all the hippos go?
I guess, you know, Captain Sensible being...
Thank you for not dignifying.
I got you. We're going to let you hang anyway.
Isn't a hippo Greek? I mean, horse in Greek? Isn't a hippodrome mean horse-drome? Horse arena?
Oh, we're trying to teach us things again, John.
I think it is. Because the hippodrome in Greece is a chariot arena, I think.
I don't know. I've had machine gun etiquette in pretty heavy rotation lately, and whatever Captain Sensible says, I agree with him.
One last thing. Captain Sensible, despite being the ancient thing that he is that we all mentioned, he looks like he's like 35. It is amazing how young Captain Sensible looks. So I know he's big on the veganism, so I don't know, man. Maybe it's something to think about. Speaking of young guys, members of Iron Sheik and Capital have formed a new band called Secret Lives. It's a new band called Secret Lives, and out of the blue, they posted basically an entire album or a long EP called Fortune Teller. The Punk News kids were really, really into this, and I gotta say, I don't blame them. I thought this was, my mind wasn't blown, but I thought this was pretty kicking. At points, it's kind of Fugazi / Ink and Daggerish, and at other points, it's kind of like early West Coast punkish. Not quite as edgy of any of that, but it's getting there. I kind of dug this, man.
This is a good listen. I liked it. It was super energetic. It was, you hit on the references. I feel like I've already said this once during the show, but like, it's not super memorable. I think it's, the band's got a lot of great influences and they're playing very well. But I don't have like a huge sense of who Secret Lives are, right now having this conversation with you. Yeah, but while I was playing it, I was totally into it. So this is likely a band to watch, if we want to say that. Do you want to say that?
Yeah, I will check out this band, see what they come out with next, and I will consider seeing them live if they come around Philadelphia.
I mean, it sort of feels to me like that. Like, if this was like a band that was in my hometown that was playing local shows and stuff like that, I would be super into them.
I'd be really into them if they were playing with HR and I got to see HR and Secret Lives together
as his backup band.
And they played reggae.
And they played reggae.
So yeah, Tom, did you do your homework on this?
You caught me again, guys. Ah.
Well, fair enough. Let's wrap up with a story that nobody needs to do homework on, because we all know about this legend, this icon. And actually, he's pretty much been doing punk rock as long as Captain Sensible. Marky Ramone, who I recently learned was in Tuxedo Moon. Richard Hell. What's that?
Oh, the band? Voidoids.
No.
The Voidoids.
Oh, he wasn't the Voidoids? I thought he was in Television.
He drummed on the Blank Generation album.
That's right. Yeah,
Mark Bell.
I didn't even
know. Ramone played in Television?
Maybe like a formative version of it, but he wasn't the drummer for like Marquee Moon.
Yeah,
I don't believe.
Well, because Richard Hell was in Television too. I don't know if Marky Ramone was in Television. He was in the Voidoids. I think I'm getting confused.
But Richard Hell left Television before Marquee Moon also. Because those albums came out the same year, I think. But I think they both came out in 77.
Yeah, can we talk about how wonderful Marquee Moon is?
You know, I haven't really been able to get in. I own that album.
I dig that.
I need to check that album out. People love that album, but
it's very it's very chill. It's a very, it's a really cerebral listen. You know, it's not a jump up and down on the couch kind of a band.
I'm usually a fan of punk rock that's very short and fast and loud and all that. But like, if I hear the opening notes to Marquee Moon itself, the song, which is like 11 minutes and change long. I get excited. I'm just like, yes, I'm in. I know what I'm doing with the next, 10 minutes.
I saw them for the first time this year, and they're still very good. I mean, obviously, that slower stuff ages better, I think, than being 60 years old trying to thrash around like a madman. But they're still cool.
Don't say that to Keith Morris, man. Keith Morris is in his prime.
That's true. He's a freak of nature.
Let's wrap this up. Actually, Jello too was kind of in his prime. But let's wrap this up talking about Marky Ramone. Marky Ramone recently released a book called Punk Rock Blitzkrieg: My Life as a Ramone, and it's basically an autobiography of his time in the Ramones. And honestly, reading this, you can definitely tell, like, maybe he wrote it with somebody, but reading this definitely feels like you're listening to Marky Ramone talk. Like, someone else didn't apply their style to his cadences and the way he expresses himself. This sounds like Marky Ramone when you read it. He posted a section on Rolling Stone. The section is him hanging out and meeting Phil Spector for the famous Ramones album End of the Century, which is the first Ramones album that Marky drums on. That's the fourth album, End of the Century, right? No. No, it's the fifth round. He also was on the one before that, Road to Ruin. So yeah. I outpunked myself. This is the second album. But did you guys read this little this section of him meeting Phil Spector? And what did you guys think of the style? And what did you guys think of his depiction? Because it varies quite a bit from Dee Dee's recollection and also Johnny's recollection.
This is going to be one of these like the four books of the Gospels thing where you have to try to like sort out
Marky, Johnny, Joey, and Dee Dee.
Yeah, because Now, I had read The Bottomy, which is Dee Dee's book, years ago. It's sitting on a shelf somewhere in my house. And I remember I was really into it, and I thought it was, like, it was quite engaging. But I can't recall, you know, going through and reading Markey's take on things. You know, I can't compare and contrast them. It's been too long, but... I'm super into anything like this that I read. Like I love hearing these kind of firsthand accounts from guys that were around there at the time when this stuff was happening. So, this is super interesting to me. I've got to read this sucker when it comes out.
I did do my homework on this, and I gotta say I loved it too. I was fully engaged in this, even though the Phil Spector stuff has actually been covered numerous times. I thought it was great, and I don't know if you guys ever used to listen to Markey's Satellite. He had a great show on Sirius Satellite where he played all these old punk rock stuff. And I'm reading this and I'm hearing it in his voice, John, like you kind of mentioned, you know, and I just love that show. He'd be like, I'm going to play a song now by some friends of mine, The Clash. It's like, wow, this guy was friends with the fucking Clash. Not very many people can say that, you know. Anyway, I'm looking forward to it. I'm pretty psyched.
Yeah, I love how this definitely is in Markey's cadence and the way Markey speaks. I mean, it honestly just sounds like he was talking and somebody transcribed what he was saying. I find it fascinating how there are so many different recollections of what happened with Phil Spector in general. I'm also fascinated that, like, even with the death of almost all the Ramones, they are still constantly taking shots at each other, like, all the time. Like, every other paragraph is a shot at Johnny, or it's a shot at Joey, or it's a shot at Dee Dee. Like, they hated each other so much. I can't believe it, you know?
I got On the Road with the Ramones for Christmas, and it was written by their tour manager. And same thing. He talked about how Johnny and Joey would only talk to each other through intermediaries, and it's fascinating stuff. I also recommend that book because it's got every single show listed that they ever played, which is super cool because I saw them twice. And so I was able to go through and actually find the specific dates where I saw them. So anyway, plug for On the Road with the Ramones also.
How do you write an album if you hate each other that much? How do you tune if you hate each other that much? You know what I mean? I just, like, I thought that it was overstated in the name of journalistic sensationalism. But when we did We'll Do It Live with CJ Ramone, I said, CJ, is it overstated? And he said, no, they really did hate each other that much. I can't believe it. But I had to.
I compare it to, did you ever have grandparents who you knew really didn't like each other? Like they were 19 and crazy and got, you know, in love and got married. And by the time you got to know them, they just didn't like each other at all. But usually in that case, it was like some religious devotion held them together. I think the Ramones, it was more monetary, but it was the same kind of thing. You know, they grinned and bared it, you know? They slept back to back, head to toe.
See, my thesis is almost like a death grip. Like, none of them want to give up because they want to be the winner. You know what I mean? Like you can't force me out of the Ramones.
Like they were getting rich, you know? I mean, Johnny, I know, took care of their money to a certain extent, but it's not like these guys were the Rolling Stones.
True,
you know, if Keith and Mick don't like each other, they're rich men.
Right, but I mean, true, but I think the Ramones were doing pretty well. You know what I mean? Well, actually, maybe not, because honestly, the Ramones were not that popular in the 80s or even like the 90s, really.
The last time I saw them, they were opening for White Zombie.
How were they? Were they good?
You know, I saw them twice. I saw them in 1992, and they were really very, very good. They were headlining, or co-headlining with Social Distortion. And then I saw them with White Zombie, and it was also very good, but it was in a hockey rink, so it was a little less. You know, the first time I saw them was in a theater. The second time was a hockey rink.
Yeah.
But
speaking of Ramones and stuff that's been in the news recently, if anyone hasn't seen this, there was an article that was in the New York Times, at the end of December, where it was they were talking about Danny Says, which is a documentary about Danny Fields.
Yeah.
And as part of that article, they have a clip of audio of Lou Reed listening to the Ramones for the first time and then commenting on them. If you haven't gone and checked that out, you should check it out. It's really cool and super, super geeky to check out.
That sounds awesome. I think we'll leave that as our last word. Adam or Tom, do you guys have any songs for this week, or should we just wrap it up?
No, you know what? Here, let's do this. So we were talking about Gallows earlier and Wade McNeil there, and I think the collective opinion is that we're not too sure about this new track.
No, we're pretty sure, actually.
All right. Well, we're not too sure about this new record. Let's go that way. So, I'm gonna play something from Wade's past that I'm sure about because it's super fun. This is a song from Black Lungs that was Wade's punk rock band that he had on the side when Alexis on Fire was still a thing. And they just put out a lot of fun, simple, you know, 70s-ish punk rock and hardcore and stuff like that. That was just, like, delightfully uncomplicated and unpretentious and all that. So this is a song called Stay at a Parkdale from Black Lungs.
Schizophrenics are stolen bicycles. Smoking crystal meth.
We are back. I just cut John off. He was trying to intro us back.
Wrap this up, Adam.
But he couldn't.
Wrap this up. I couldn't.
He's too slow.
Well, I was trying to get
in
the
park. He can't get a word in.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll let you talk.
Adam was just too sharp, too quick, and I was trying to get in the park down and I couldn't. Adam, wrap this up, man. You've beat me so soundly when it comes to talking. You got to finish this up. I got to recuperate. I got to mend.
Okay, so anyways, yeah, that's our show for tonight. Thanks, Tom, for joining us and for
my pleasure, being, guys.
Knowing what you're talking about. And thank you, John, for, you know, maintaining levels of energy that the rest of us can't. And thank you to you for listening to the show for some reason. So if you want to write us a letter, and you should write us a letter, it's podcast@punknews.org. That's where you can tell us stuff. And we're going to be back soon, so bye.